What's up? This Movies On Up discussion episode. Favorite movies based on TV shows. A place where dreams are canceled. I am Dave, joined by my co-host, Ryan.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say like the canceler of your dreams.
I was going to say something, but then I thought like, oh, co-host is kind of a television-y term.
Yeah,
so
I guess.
Ryan's my co-host of the podcast. We are Movies On Up. Tagline for this week, a place where dreams are canceled. If you know what movie that is from, mail it to us, moviesonup@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter, @moviesonup, facebook.com/moviesonup, or moviesonup.com. It's fall TV season. Some premiered last week, a lot premiering this week, so we thought we'll just do a favorite.
Movies based off a television program.
But before we get to that, it's time to tune in to a bonus list. These are the top five movies that spawned a TV show. Number five, Weird Science. Great movie, terrible TV show. Number four, Highlander. Kind of the same thing. Number three, Alien Nation. I'm seeing a theme here.
Oh, wait.
Number two, Buffy the Vampire
That's
Slayer.
That's the opposite.
That's the opposite. Joss Whedon, I'm a fan of some of his work. Foreshadowing.
Yeah, maybe.
Number one, Ghostbusters.
I like that movie.
And tonight, well, I don't know when you're listening to this, but the night we're recording, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. premieres.
Which could be on the list, but we haven't seen it yet because it hasn't been on.
Yeah, but a lot of TV shows premiering. I know your list came out a little different than you expected.
This is the first time that we really talked before we put our list together.
A little bit.
And it was to take away the possibility of having a lot of crossover. And I think there were... I think Dave's number one. If you've ever listened to our show, even once, you probably can guess what it's going to be. He couldn't, but after my suggestion, that became his number one. And I think we kind of divvied up about three or four movies. So I really, by the time I left here last week, I think I only had to fill about two to three slots on my list. So it was mostly done. And I think the ones that I ended up putting in there are all things that I like. I can't say that I've really seen the TV shows all that much because some of them are kind of old, but I like the movies, that's for damn sure.
I had most of mine, but then after a little research, I came across a lot of honorable mentions that I hadn't thought about before that. But enough talking about our lists. Ryan, let's get to our lists. Your number five favorite movie based on a television show.
It's based on one of my all-time favorite television shows, probably top five of all time. It is from 1983. It is The Twilight Zone, directed by Joe Dante, John Landis, Steven Spielberg, and George Miller, starring Dan Aykroyd, Albert Brooks, Vic Morrow, Scatman Carruthers, John Lithgow, amongst others. It's remakes of four episodes from the original series. They're very, very faithful remakes to the show, so it kind of makes sense that, well, if it's based on something that I love from TV, obviously I would like it in movie form. And for the most part, I do. I think some of the vignettes are better than others. The first one, I think, is really pretty good. And I think the last one is really, really good. And the last one is the one starring John Lithgow when he steps into William Shatner's role for the troll thing on the side of the plane. And that's absolutely perfect casting. You have a guy like John Lithgow who is capable of going so over the top, which is exactly what Bill Shatner did in the original series. I think that ended up being perfect. The movie's probably best remembered, worst remembered, I guess, for the deaths of Vic Morrow and some of the child actors during an accident on set, which is a shame. It was during John Landis's part, and it's actually some of his best work, but it's something that he really doesn't like to acknowledge, and for good reason. It kind of puts a damper on the movie as a whole, which is a shame because it is, really a good movie. The four that they picked to remake in the movie are four of my favorite. The Kick the Can one is not entirely creepy and Twilight Zone-y in nature, but Scatman Carruthers, I think, is really sweet in that part. So number five, Twilight Zone.
I love that. Lithgow stole that one for me.
Yeah.
Lithgow's performance. I love Lithgow, and that's such a Lithgow-y performance that I absolutely love it. My number five, also based on an older TV show that my babysitter growing up would have it on, so I kind of had to watch, was never a fan, even though some of my favorite things in the world are similar to this story. And then it's a series from 1965. and the movie is from 1998. Got a lot of crap when it came out. Kind of deservedly so. It is 1998's Lost in Space. As an adaptation of the TV show, it's a terrible job. As a standalone, like, sci-fi movie, it's actually not bad. Gary Oldman, William Hurt, Matt LeBlanc, Mimi Rogers, Heather Graham, Lacey Chabert as the Robinson family, and then Dr. Smith. I like the movie. I rewatched it just a couple months ago, and as a standalone sci-fi movie, it's not that bad. But it was different tonally from the TV show. It went a lot of different places than the TV show did. I mean, I liked it more than the TV show. I guess it didn't hurt it because I didn't really like the TV show. But I thought they made a solid sci-fi movie. It just happened to have the same name and got a lot of crap for that.
I think that's my problem with it is I did like the TV show. And you're right. It was very much different from the movie was different from the television show. And as we talked about with Star Trek, you know, if you're a fan of the series and you don't feel like the movie adaptation is faithful to the series, you know, it can be kind of a sore subject for you. I mean, I don't hate Lost in Space as much as some of the Trekkies seem to hate the Star Trek reboots. But, you know, then again, I don't really feel much one way or the other about Lost in Space as a movie. I like the show, though.
If you watch it as just pretend, forget the name and just watch it as a sci-fi movie.
Forget the name, forget the characters.
Yeah, there's some solid stuff in there.
Sure, I'll give it to you. My number four is from a television series, which I know that I'm going to take a bunch of crap for. I like it, but I think that it's been on long enough to where there was a noticeable dip in the quality. It is the Simpsons movie from 2007, directed by David Silverman, starring, you know who it's starring, Dan Castellaneta, Julie Carver, Nancy Cartwright, Yardley Smith, Hank Azaria, Albert Brooks, amongst others. The show's been on for 25 years, and with the amount of talented writers that they've had in that writing room kind of coming and going, they've done a pretty good job of being able to replace them. But I think that right about when the movie came out, I feel like the show started to rebound a little bit. And I don't know if it was, you know, based around the success of the movie, but it was good to see The Simpsons kind of come back and be what I remembered it being from when it first started. Most people know the story, you know, that it took a long time for the movie to come out. They started talking about a Simpsons movie in the early 90s, and I believe the cast actually signed on in like 2001, so it was still 6 years before the movie actually came out. And when you have that kind of a build-up to something, I think that it would be very easy for the movie to be a letdown, but I don't think that it was. I mean, something as big as The Simpsons, the movie, you know, would have to be really, really good to live up. We talked about Lost in Space and people being a fan of the series but not a fan of the movie. I don't know many Simpsons series fans that don't love the movie, and I think that says a lot about the movie.
Yeah, it was a weird timing thing because the show had started to dip in quality for a couple of years, so the timing seemed like a bad time to put the movie out. But your diehard Simpsons fans, which who isn't, had waited so long for it that they went and it was good. It was better than I expected. My if it would have come out late 80s, early 90s, my expectations would have been so much higher. And in a way, it might have helped because if you put out a movie in that season, you know, 12 or 13 range, when it's really at its peak, I don't know that a movie can live up to what they're doing. But then they come out later, and it was nice because it's like, oh, yeah, these still are The Simpsons, but the show was never the same. It did see a little jump in quality, like you said, but it didn't sustain it for very long. But
no, but there again, for something that's been on for 25 years, I mean, it's hard consistently. And it's not like they do 12, 16 episodes a season either. I mean, I just think that at some point, you know, it probably runs its course. You look at a lot of series over in Britain, you know, they're around for 3 or 4 seasons. They're all tremendous. But that's it. That's the shelf life of these shows. When you leave The Simpsons on for, good God, like a quarter of a century. That's an awful long time to do anything, and to do anything as well. When The Simpsons is good, you know, there's not much on TV that's better. And I still think that even for 25 years, there's still more good Simpsons than there is really about anything else.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. Speaking of British shows that generally only get about three seasons.
Oh, series is.
We're going to go on to my number four. It was a show that lasted three seasons or three series in Britain. Did 18 episodes over 3 years and then filmed a movie. It was The Inbetweeners. So my number four is The Inbetweeners movie. The show was great. Just about four high school kids that don't fit in. I hope that people didn't cringe because they were thinking of the MTV, The Inbetweeners, because that wasn't as good. But the British one, just so funny, so real. It was just hilarious. And then you take the Sex and the City 2 approach where you just take these four characters and then throw them on vacation and make a movie of it. And it was great. There's no quality dip. It was just as enjoyable as the show. Same, everything about the show was all in there. And in a way, kind of nice closure on these characters.
That's probably the way to do it. If there is ever the Community movie where they talk about, like, was it five seasons and a movie?
Six seasons and a movie.
Yeah. It provides a good closure point, and you don't have it stretched out for, you know, 25 years and have some seasons that people just don't care about. My next two movies actually come from, well, at least I don't know how long this 1959 series started because I never saw an episode of it, but I know my number two only had six episodes. But back to number three. I didn't know this was based off a TV series, but it is one of my favorite movies of all time. It is from 1987. It is The Untouchables, directed by Brian De Palma, starring Kevin Costner, Sean Connery, Bob De Niro, and Andy Garcia. Apparently based off a 1959 series starring Robert Stack, yeah, the Unsolved Mysteries guy, as Elliot Ness. Obviously, I wasn't around for the first run in 59, and I never saw any of the reruns, but by most accounts, from what I read on the internet, and if it's on the internet, it has to be true, the series was, you know, pretty all right. The thing that I find really pretty rad about not only the series, but the movie, is they're both kind of based on a real life story. I mean, loosely, not everything was taken right from the newspapers, but I think it would have been incredibly interesting to see these events go down in the newspapers. You have a guy like Al Capone that is larger than life criminal who's loved and hated by the same people and almost an equal number of each. And then you have Elliot Ness, who is, you know, essentially a nationwide known super cop. And they're kind of, you know, like a real life Batman and Joker kind of going at it. That had to be just nuts to happen. And you see this stuff in the movie where, you know, in the TV show too, where, you know, Elliot Ness's gang essentially became a gang to take on the gang. So kind of rad. And it's even just more nuts that, again, based off of some real life events.
This was on my list until I realized you put it on yours, because I love this movie. I love the story. I also did not watch the TV show, but it's just such a good movie that so many movies could learn from, because Gangster Squad came out a couple years ago, or last year. Should have been good like this.
Should have been very similar to this.
It just wasn't. And this movie played it. It wasn't sensational. It wasn't fantastical. It was just really, really good. I believe Connery got an Oscar for this.
Yeah,
one,
he
too.
Won.
Yeah. Yeah, so Costner was good, Connery. Just such a good movie. I can't speak for the TV show. My number three, though, I can speak for the TV show, at least a little bit more than half of it. We talked about some shows go on too long and kind of wear out their welcome. My number three did, The X-Files. The show was fantastic. The movie came out in 98. Maybe not as good of a movie as I wanted it to be, but I still liked it. I just wish everything had been done differently about it. The fact that you do the movie and then they still tried to get quite a few more seasons out of it, even after Duchovny left and Robert Patrick comes in. I won't let that take away how much I enjoyed the movie, though. Would I have rather seen the movie come a couple years later to wrap up a story? Yes,
yeah.
I would have. But I liked it for what it was at the time. I just feel timing could have been a lot better with it. But you see something, you know, a lot of them talk about it and then they never happen. So I guess there's something to be said that they went out and made it happen. I could do without the sequel. The sequel 10 years later, that was the problem with the sequel.
That's the timing that really I find weird.
Because the sequel wasn't terrible. It wasn't good, but it was just a Monster of the Week episode, which I want more from an X-Files movie unless it's an ongoing series. Like if you know, X-Files 2 was just the second of 4 or 5, I don't care. Do a Monster of the Week episode for it. I don't care, but it didn't really do anything for the story, where at least the first one, Fight for the Future, whatever it was called.
Yeah.
I liked it. It did tied up a lot from the show, but then the show kept going on and kept going on and kept going on.
It does seem weird to try and tie stuff up and then like have kind of a half-dead version of itself going forward. Yeah, I think that had such potential. If it would have, you know, in a perfect world, I think this is how you wrap up the series. And, you know, if they'd have wrapped it up after about 5 seasons, I think that would have been tremendous.
I mean, I'm not saying it had to end with the movie, but you could build off of the movie and go somewhere with it. But that it just felt like...
Or relaunch the series after the movie. Maybe if you want to wrap up Mulder,
yeah,
you know, do that movie. And
like, timing-wise, it could have been a little better. But overall, like, if you rewatch the movie now, again, if you take it as I understand the X-Files, and it's still a good movie. It is still pretty good, especially if you're sitting on all this time and those expectations are gone. Because this, unlike The Simpsons, like, my expectations were lower for The Simpsons because of when it came out. My expectations were at the height for The X-Files because timing-wise, it came out at a good time. It was 5 seasons in, but it just got weird after that. But that doesn't take it away that I still enjoy that movie.
My number 2, as much as I've complained about series that have gone on way too long, this series went on for exactly 6 episodes in 1982. I've not seen one of them. But from what I understand, when you watch the movie version of The Naked Gun from the files of the police squad, you get a lot of the flavor from the television show. Leslie Nielsen starred in both as Frank Drebin. The movie had Priscilla Presley, Ricardo Montalban making another appearance on the podcast, George Kennedy, and OJ. The humor was pretty much the same from the TV show. Lots of sight gags, lots of literal jokes that it seems like in the 80s, the mid to late 80s, there was that sort of airplane type humor that I think is very evident in The Naked Gun. And I guess the one thing that, you know, if some people are going to talk, you know, negatively about this movie, and I don't know many people that don't think that it's funny, it's that it kind of typecasts Leslie Nielsen as this slapstick kind of guy. And I feel like we've almost talked about this before, and it might have been when Leslie Nielsen passed away, but I think I agree that the guy was a really good actor and capable of a lot more. But on the other hand, I think if you're able as an actor or really in any walk of life to leave a legacy the way that Leslie Nielsen did, his performance in this movie is phenomenal. And the sequels, he did exactly what he needed to do, and it made these movies as hilarious as they are. Maybe that's typecasting, but I think, you know, you're going to be remembered for being, you know, one of the best at what you were doing. And I think that's the legacy that anyone would want to leave.
Yeah, this one was actually on my list until I realized I was the one that was supposed to take X-Files and not you, so I replaced it. I love these movies. I do. I saw the TV show when I was younger, and I went back and watched it after falling in love with the Naked Gun movies because I wouldn't know which one to pick. I think the first one is probably the best, but they all three have moments that I still just love, and they hit me young. Like, a lot of my sense of humor got shaped from these movies. Like, it showed me that you could be weird and silly and be funny. And I mean, it showed me, like, you could be weird and silly and be funny. And that helped me kind of grow my sense of humor and what I find funny. And Leslie Nielsen was a genius in these movies. I was going to make the same point before you even made it, is that in a way it's kind of sad that he is such a good actor, but that's why these worked, because he wasn't just a funny man out there trying to just falling over and stuff. It worked because he was a capable actor. And, you know, his legacy will be these movies, because who cares about Mr. Magoo, Spy Hard, Dracula,
Forbidden Planet.
Yeah, like those. Like all the goofy stuff that he did afterwards because of this. I would have liked to see him do another serious thing before he passed, but I just love him so much. And I love these movies, and it was hard leaving it off. I was going to gush on it on my honorable mention, so I'm kind of glad that you did put it on there, because I do love these movies so much. And this, sadly, like, I didn't watch O.J. play when he was in – But I loved O.J. Simpson because of these movies. Nordberg, like, yeah. I loved him.
This is –
And he was so good in these. Like, the role he was playing was brilliant. And then when he did that, I was crushed, because I wasn't crushed because O.J. Simpson, the football player,
yeah, the Heisman Trophy winner.
I was crushed.
Sideline reporter.
Nordberg did this. And yeah. It's like, oh, no. So – I love these movies, though. I could go on and on about that.
For the genre that they're in, right along with Airplane, I think that's, you know, very similarly done. They're perfect examples. Like, if you want to know how you should do a slapstick comedy,
Seltzer and Friedberg need to just be strapped down Clockwork Orange style and just shown Airplane and the Naked Gun movies over and over and over again, because they're doing it wrong. And it's almost what they're doing is almost a slap in the face to Leslie Nielsen and the Zuckers and everything that they did so well.
I think, you know, you could show those guys those movies ad nauseam.
Oh, it wouldn't stick.
It wouldn't stick, but these guys that did Airplane and these guys did the Naked Gun, they had talent. You know, Zucker and Friedberg just don't.
No.
I'm sorry. I don't care how many times they see it. You just can't do it.
Spoofing isn't taking something everybody knows, reenacting it, and then adding a fart joke. That's what Seltzer and Friedberg movies are. The Zucker brothers.
You can have fart jokes.
Yo, you can absolutely have fart plenty. Jokes. I'm not anti-fart joke. I'm pro-fart joke.
Even like, I mean, I'm thinking of Naked Gun, like the bathroom scene with the microphone still being on.
Yeah.
Like, you can have scatological humor.
Yeah.
But
whether you like these movies or not, just Frank Drebin in an umpire, like as the umpire, think about that and try not to chuckle. Like, just that whole scene and that whole sequence, like, that movie is so funny. And he is now I'm sad because I remember he's dead, and I love these movies.
Yeah, but I mean, you still have the movies. They still hold up. You can go back and watch any of those movies today, and I think they're just as funny as they were in 1988 or whenever.
I'm going to go to another group of cops, not the police squad. They are the squad down on Jump Street. 21 Jump Street, 1987. I loved the show. I truly loved everything about it. I thought Johnny Depp was awesome as Hanson. I liked all of the characters. I liked the idea of the story. Seasons 1 and 2 were really good. Then things started to change, and it became a revolving door of a cast, pretty much. But I still watched, and when they came out on DVD, I still bought them and rewatched them all. So I just really liked the TV show. I love Jonah Hill, so I was excited to see him doing the adaptation, even though I knew that would mean it would be funnier. But at the time, I wasn't a Channing Tatum fan. And then the Tatum turn was invented. The movie came out. I could watch this movie for 24 hours straight if I had to. I love this movie. There are so many jokes nonstop, and the gags are funny, and it still has a good story. The relationship between Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill is fun to watch, and just everything going on, and I can't wait for the sequel, but it's so weird because I did love the show, and then this comes out, and it's completely different than the show, but I love it even more than the show. Yeah, it could have been the same movie called something else, but it was a good movie, so I don't care. It was just, it's so funny, and I know I talked it up so much before you had even seen it, but then I know you still liked it, even though I had hyped it up quite a bit, because it's just funny, and it's good.
That was the point I was about to make. A lot of times, it seems like with comedies, more often than not, when they get talked up a lot to me, oh, this is the funniest thing you're ever going to see. Oh, it's hilarious. I LOL'd the entire time. I tend to get kind of skeptical. And very rarely do movies hold up. I think that this one, yeah, I had heard about enough, way more than enough, on 21 Jump Street by the time I actually saw it. But I think it was may even have been funnier than what it was presented to me. And I think that with Dave constantly talking about it, I don't even know that that's possible for it to be funnier than what he said it was. But it was really a ridiculously funny movie. I like younger Franco. I think he was perfect. They're just about everyone in the movie, whether they show up in small roles, absolutely. The gym coach, hilarious.
Rob Riggle.
Yeah, Rob Riggle.
Jake Johnson in a small role as the principal. Just everybody.
Yeah.
The cameos that were great. And as a fan of a show, I loved that. There was a couple of them. Like, three of the main characters from the show showed up, and I loved it. Like, it was well done because they didn't feel shoehorned in there. They served their purpose. They didn't overdo it. And it was just a joke a second, almost. I mean, it was just
pretty
funny.
Much, yeah. The pacing was really good. And I think that, you know, it is one that no matter how many times, I mean, you can know the jokes are coming. I mean, I know that, you know, he's going to beat his dick off, but I don't care. That makes me smile just thinking about it. Good movie. That's a really good pick. I probably would have had it on my list had I not known that you were going to put it on yours.
Yeah, I threw a curveball there.
Yeah, you really did. Yeah, your top two, real curveballs, way out of left field. My number one, I don't think it was out of left field, but it seemed to be one that, at least in our preliminary discussions, may have slipped your mind. It is another cartoon movie from 1999, directed by Trey Parker. It's the South Park movie, Bigger, Longer, Uncut, starring Matt Stone, Trey Parker, Mary Kay Bergman, and the late Isaac Hayes. This is an episode of South Park on steroids. Absolutely. When I mentioned that there was kind of a lull in the quality of The Simpsons earlier, I think that when The Simpsons kind of went down, I think it was right about the time where South Park was really on the scene and absolutely killing it. This movie may have been like the pinnacle of South Park. I think the incredible thing about it is, you know, most people had just known Matt Stone and Trey Parker from their work on South Park, not necessarily, you know, familiar with Cannibal or Orgasmo or anything else they did. But I think this showed that these are talented dudes. They're not just funny guys that can make cartoons, but, you know, the music that they wrote for that, you know, Blame Canada was nominated for an Oscar.
What would Brian Boitano do?
Yeah.
Like, the songs are just...
Yeah, and you know, Uncle Fucker. I mean, just so many. You didn't really see any of the songs on the cartoon, but then, you know, you see these guys do this, and it's not a surprise that they're able to be super successful with the Book of Mormon. Like, you can see, oh, of course these guys would be awesome at doing a musical, which really kind of is what this movie is. It's sort of a musical. Really, really talented dudes. Really a funny, funny movie. And again, it came along. I think the timing of this was perfect. South Park had built and built and built. It needed to have a movie, and it was, you know, very, very close to what the cartoon was. They could just get away with a whole lot more because it was rated R.
It's one of my favorite theater-going experiences ever because I saw it opening night, and I don't think anybody in there really knew 100% what to expect. You knew you were going to get South Park, but I don't think people expected Uncle Fucker, and they didn't expect the extremes that it went. And it was one of just to be in a room with 300 people where everybody is laughing nonstop is an awesome experience. And that's what this did, because it's just joke after joke after joke. And we've talked about timing a lot. This one was weird. The show debuted in 97. This movie's 99, so it was early. And it was back when South Park was pretty much just, I don't want to disrespect it, but kind of like a gross out. Like, a lot of the attention it got early on was because they were pushing the envelope. They were, you know, swearing, fart jokes. They were putting a lot of, like, gross
humor. Had a giant satellite dish coming out of Cartman's ass.
Yeah, there was a lot of, like, pushing the boundary type humor. And then to watch them grow after this, like, we're 14 years later, South Park's still relevant. And you know what? It's no worse. It's definitely not worse. If anything, it's better than what it was. Like, they keep getting, they're staying so strong. Like, yeah, not every episode is a hit, but every season has one or two episodes that's just brilliant and among the best. And just the quality of what these guys can do. And it just, it's disappointing that, not disappointing is not the right word. Like, I liked Orgasmo. I liked Cannibal the Musical. I loved Basketball, which they just starred in. They really didn't have much else to do other than starring in it. But I loved it. And then this blows all those away. And then I love Team America. Like, I love Team America. But people, it didn't seem to do all that well. And then they kind of...
I think it was very specific. I mean, I can remember watching the Thunderbirds. My dad loved that crap. And seeing those puppets do that, I mean, the sex scene in Team America.
One of the funniest things I've ever seen.
And again, the songs in that are so
I
good.
I think those songs are even better than the South Park ones.
You might
almost
be right, yeah.
But I like that they went on and they did Book of Mormon, and that was such a huge hit for them. But I miss them in movies. Like, I realize we're going to get a Book of Mormon movie eventually, but I miss what they would have done after Team America. And they're so hard for me not to respect so much. Like, the level of talent these guys have is disgusting. Like, it's disturbing how talented these guys are.
Talent and balls.
Yes.
I mean, to do, like, we talk about how brilliant this show is. Like, the Golden PSP episode about Terry Schiavo. You know, like, the balls you have to do that. And they did it so well. It's just, it's great that you have, I mean, it's one thing to have one or the other, but when you have some guys that have both and they're not afraid to use either, I do hope they get back to making movies, but that's the sad, like, they, whatever they do is going to be awesome. It just so happens that, you know, on this show, we like movies more. You know, we're not Broadway on up. So come back, Matt Stone, Trey Parker, make another movie so we can gush about it some more.
They're just the best at smart, dumb humor. And like, they appeal to people who like the smart aspect of it, which I do, and the people that don't get that.
The people that like Asses of Fire.
Yeah, so I love them enough. Like, I'm gushing a lot on this episode, but we haven't even got started yet. My number one.
Let the gush. There's going to be a lot of moisture coming
from. Based on my favorite TV show ever. Not really based on, because it's the same cast and everything.
It's a continuation.
Continuation of a show that got taken away terribly, tragically early. It is based on the show Firefly, which I love. It is Serenity. Joss Whedon did what he could to make it happen, and in 2005... ended up making it happen after the show was ripped off the air after, I don't know how many episodes, 6, 7?
I feel like it was like 12 or 13.
Eh,
I thought it got.
Not enough. But
I know I watched them all in one day.
Yeah, on my recommendation.
I think it was on your DVDs.
Yes. I gave him the DVD and the movie and said.
I had already seen the movie.
Oh.
I saw the movie in theaters before I saw the show.
You will watch this in one day.
I did.
And it's just so good, and I think as a standalone movie, it's a really good sci-fi movie. He did a good job of, if you go into it blindly...
Sure did.
You meet the characters, you understand the motivations, you get the relationships, you understand the stakes, you're introduced to the world. All of this in a standalone movie. So as a standalone sci-fi movie... If we ever did a sci-fi movie episode, this would be in my top five without a doubt. Not just because of how much I love the show, but it's a fantastic sci-fi movie. Like, everything about it, I think Chiwetel Ejiofor is one of my favorite screen villains ever.
And I think we've done screen villains
before. I did,
before,
and I said
he
that.
He was your favorite.
Because I love him. It just, the show was so good, and this was just... It didn't feel like just a movie version of the show. It felt like something completely different. It didn't just feel like a longer episode, because it did tie up some stuff. It did wrap up some stuff. It did kill off
some
stuff. Yeah, but it's so depressing to know that we didn't get a second one, because this could have kicked off a Serenity movie series that I would have loved. It should have been the kickoff of a franchise.
Or at least a relaunch of the show, perhaps.
Something other than, I mean, I like the comics, and there's comics coming, and I like the idea of that enough, but I want more of this. I want more Malcolm Reynolds on the big screen. I want more River. Like, all of them. I love this show so much. And the movie exceeded any expectations. Talk about being high, because the show was so good that you think, like, how do you top what the show was? And then he just blows it out of the water. By essentially introduce, it felt like a reboot almost. Like, it almost felt like we're reintroducing everything while keeping it the same and just making it flashier and newer. And it was perfect. Like, this is a perfect movie to me.
I did like it a lot, so much that it kind of did make me interested in going back and seeing the show, knowing that, you know, it didn't have that long of a run to begin with. And it is unfortunate that it wasn't able to spawn anything else. I think, you know, had the timeline been shifted and the series started, you know, a decade later and the movie came out a decade later, with Kickstarter now, I mean, you see the Veronica Mars movie getting made. I could absolutely see, you know, where this would make an incredible amount of sense, and it wouldn't take anything, essentially, other than, hey, there's a Kickstarter for whether it's a continuation of, you make it a web series, make it a show, make it a movie. I think any of it would fly, but it just seems like that Whedon guy's got nothing else better to do. Like, why not do another one of these, right?
He's in a spot now where he could make whatever he wants almost, but
just doesn't, unless it's time. That's what he needs to make.
It's time is what he needs. So, I mean, he could get the backing or the funding for almost anything, but he doesn't have the time to do it. And that does depress me, because I still do rewatch this show all the time. You know, I rewatch the movie all the time because it's so good. And just something about, I loaned my DVDs to a friend before you had even watched it. And he brought them to me and said, he gave me a hug because of how much he liked the show. And it was just something about the show just hit me. And if you're, I realize it's not for everybody, but it hit a certain demographic of people and it hit them so hard. And the movie was just a thank you almost for caring so much. And he nailed. He delivered, which Whedon has a history of delivering. So,
any ones that hit you real hard but not hard enough to make your list?
Star Trek and Star Trek Into Darkness, but we talked about them a lot.
Those probably would have made my list, but
had we not just done an episode. The Mod Squad with Claire Danes and Giovanni Ribisi and Omar Epps. It was okay. The show didn't hit me. I liked the movie more, but it felt disposable. But I still watch it if it's on. The Sweeney from last year, based on the British show. I liked Get Smart. That's one of those. I loved the show growing up.
Yeah, I did too.
I enjoyed the movie enough.
It was all right.
I thought Steve Carell did good. I thought, yeah, Anne Hathaway did good. I liked The Rock in it. Like, it wasn't great, but I enjoyed it. And then one that I didn't know if it would make your list or not, because I don't know that we've talked about this, but I thought it was a fantastic. It was one of those that took the same idea, took the same people, and then just turned it up to 11, was the A-Team.
Yeah, I did like the A-Team.
It was just fun. Yeah. It took the premise, it just turned it into a ridiculous action movie. And I'm not always all for ridiculous action movies, but if you set the stakes that this is going to be ridiculous and we're going to do whatever we want, if you establish that early, I'm on board. And that's what they did. The tank stuff, just everything about this movie was ridiculous. And if you can just let go, and Copley and Cooper and Liam Neeson and
Quentin Rampage
Jackson, like, I liked the cast. The cast was good, but it is such an iconic cast that I would have liked to see more A-Team movies, because I thought it did a good job relaunching it as that, but it almost made my list, but it's my favorite of the honorable mentions.
Yeah, A-Team was good. Some of the ones that I left off, Mission Impossible, I think could have made it. You can pick any number of the movies from that franchise, could have made an appearance on the list somewhere. I wanted to like, when we talked about movies that based off a cartoon that you really like, you love the show, but doesn't quite live up. The Aqua Teen Hunger Force movie, not even close to living up to the show. I mean, if this was just, hey, name a show that you really like that happens to have a movie as well, that one would have made it. But I didn't really care for the movie. The Avengers with Sean Connery, I didn't really see the show at all. Again, that was one that was way before my time. The movie I thought was Yeah, I think those are probably about it for the also-rans. Mission Impossible is really the only, and I guess the A-Team would be ones that I wish I maybe could have fit on, but it'd be hard taking something else off.
Yeah. Before we go, we're going to do a watch this bonus. We always like to do one themed. Before we even get to our themed one, I meant to mention it when we were talking South Park. 6 days to Air. If you don't believe, if you question the genius of Trey Parker and Matt Stone, watch this documentary because it follows them. They put a show together in 6 days, write it, story, everything in 6 days. And it's a really cool documentary that kind of shows that.
It was streaming
process
for a long time on Netflix.
Yeah,
I don't know if it still is.
So if you're even a remote South Park, if you even like South Park a little bit, check it out because it's fantastic. But now for the main bonus watch this attraction. Ryan, tell the people to set the DVRs for all the new shows and watch them later. Put at the top of your watch list a movie starring George Clooney,
who of course was in a couple television shows, most notably Facts of Life
and Roseanne
and ER. Apparently, I guess he was on that show for a little bit. I'm gonna go with Up in the Air. Anytime I get a chance to talk about the lovely and talented Anna Kendrick, I will take it. I think she was really good as kind of that awkward, new kind of techie person that's trying to, you know, do the job that Clooney's been doing for years, going around firing people. I think it came along at a time when people were really getting fired. The economy was terrible. And then you have this guy that a movie revolves around him, and all he does is go around and fire people, trying to, you know, put his life together, which there isn't really much of except for just trying to collect a lot of frequent flyer miles. Get that black card.
I love that movie. Yeah. She's so good in it. Vera Farmiga is good. The cameos are good. Zach Galifianakis, Danny McBride. I'm going back to when Clooney was still a TV star.
Still the same ER haircut, kind of.
Yeah, right at the same neck tattoos.
Yeah.
As Dr. Drake Ramore or whatever he played.
Yeah.
From Dusk Till Dawn, one of those weird movies that if you don't know what you're getting into, you get two movies, kind of. And I liked it. I really enjoyed it. I liked everything about this movie, especially the Clune.
I think it's my favorite vampire movie. I think I'm on record as saying that.
It's not my favorite Clooney movie, but I've mentioned Out of Sight so many times on this podcast, so I'm going to skip. Speaking of so many times on this podcast, later this week, our 100th episode of Movies On Up, which is kind of a cool thing. You do something 100 times for
anything
free.
100 times, yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to do that later this week. If you didn't listen last week, we set up the ground rules for Fantasy Film Ball for this year. I still haven't put up the blog post, but that'll come this week soon. Basically just pick 5 movies releasing from September 27th until the end of December. You get 1 point for every $10 million earned domestically, 2 points for every Oscar or Golden Globe nomination, and then 3 points for every win. So pick 5 movies. You can listen to our draft or our fall winter preview, or just check the calendar and let us know what you think will do that. Other than that, you can find me at Dave Bacella on the Twitter or DaveBacella.com. Find us at moviesonup.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, Twitter @moviesonup. Mail us moviesonup@gmail.com. Leave us an iTunes review. Check us out on Stitcher. Whatever you need to do, we're trying to figure out any other way you can listen to this show. So hit us up. Let us know what you're thinking. And we'll see you later this week with episode 100.
Hooray!
Ryan, until then,
keep it up.